welcome to TwerpCast Episode 16, WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel. Welcome to TwerpCast Episode 16, WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel. Welcome to TwerpCast Episode 16, WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel. Today, I'd like to introduce you to our special guest panelists, knitter extraordinaire Beth Halloran and her infamous brother, Ken Halloran, extreme dork extraordinaire. As always, our executive producer in charge of super booking, James Caswell.
And I'd like to introduce Doug Zeitlin, Doctor Companion wannabe who is convinced that if he builds a TARDIS, the Doctor will come.
As you can see, we're doing things a little bit differently for WhoCast. We're going to start things with a roundtable discussion and just go from there, see what happens.
Like we usually do when we are previewing things, we are going to issue a spoiler alert a little bit later on in the broadcast. We will be talking about the season 4 finale of Doctor Who, which has not yet aired in the United States. Don't worry, though, we'll let you know when we get there.
Well, Ken, I see you've brought with you a little timeline of Doctor Who. Why don't you share with us a little bit about it?
The show premiered on 23rd November 1963. And again a week later. Something else happened that day in America. They figured everyone wasn't paying attention to this show, so they'd put the same first episode on again the following week. At the time, it starred William Hartnell as the mysterious Doctor, and he was on the air for 3 seasons, plus the first 2 serials of the 4th season. But then his ill health was forcing him to leave the series, and that's when they replaced him with Patrick Troughton, which kind of started a pattern. Patrick Troughton was on the air for the rest of that season and 2 more seasons besides. Then John Pertwee came in, and he was on for 5 years. Then Tom Baker came in, and he was on for 7 years. Then Peter Davison started, and he was on for 3 seasons, except for the final serial of Series 21. That's when Colin Baker started, and then he had 2 more seasons. Although his was kind of tainted because they had a 17-month break right in the middle of it. And then, after that, Sylvester McCoy took over for the last 3 seasons, basically ending December 1989. You probably know this because you're actually listening to us, but just in case you don't, the usual designation for the Doctors is that the first Doctor, which would be William Hartnell, then when they switch to Patrick Troughton, he's the second Doctor, and so on. So when you hear us say, whatever Doctor, it's whichever one they were at. Then the series was canceled, and so, of course, we're doing a podcast about a TV show that ended 19 years ago, right?
Fox, in 1996, who was a very minor competitor, put it up against the big 3, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and their sweeps broadcast. The immediate result of the poor broadcast planning was it was a ratings failure. On a side note, for anybody who'd actually seen Doctor Who before, it was really pretty mediocre. They tried to hold the continuity. They brought in the previous Doctor to do a regeneration scene.
Mediocre for Doctor Who is still better than about 90% of the stuff you're going to find on TV.
100% of all reality programming. The failure of the Fox TV movie pretty much was the nail in the coffin of Doctor Who for a while. Fandom has a way of keeping things alive. BBC did several webcasts. Big Finish Production has continually done audio dramas.
People would actually sit around and record stories about established properties. I can't imagine such a thing.
Go figure. One of the very big fans of Doctor Who happens to be a television producer named Russell Davies. And Russell happens to be a very talented, very well-renowned television producer, does a lot of work for the BBC, convinces them, let's bring it back for another 13 episodes. 2005, he reinvents Doctor Who. Now, not in the same way that Ron Moore reinvented Battlestar Galactica. Russell's actually quite talented.
It was a rating smash in Britain.
Absolutely. It came out to rave critical reviews, rave fan reviews, and some of the highest rated television in British history.
You mentioned all the other Doctors, but you didn't mention that the new Doctor was Christopher Eccleston.
God forgive me, he's my favorite Doctor, even though he was only in 13 episodes. Christopher Eccleston just really embodied what I felt Doctor Who really meant. Unfortunately, he did leave after the 13th episode, and I'm so glad that David Tennant has done a wonderful job as his successor. I won't call him a replacement, because he can't fill shoes that big, but David Tennant is just awesome. The assumption is, if you're listening to this particular Twerpcast, you have at least a passing knowledge of the Doctor Who. We've touched very briefly on the history of it, but really we want to talk about what Doctor Who is to us and give you a little preview or review, depending on when you're listening, of season 4, season finale. Let's start with our guest, Beth. How are you introduced to Doctor Who?
I was introduced to Doctor Who back when I was in college in 1983. I had friends who watched it. I spent weekends at a friend's house so that we could stay up on Saturday nights and watch it at 11:30 at night. And at that point, it was being shown on PBS, and they did entire stories in one night, which would be anywhere from 4 to 6 episodes that they'd show in Britain because it was an episodic show. But on PBS, rather than show you 4 half-hour shows or 6 half-hour shows, they'd show the whole thing in one sitting. My first doctor was Tom Baker.
4 to 6 episodes in one sitting, that makes for a really late night.
Yes, but we'd watch it, and then we'd go to sleep on the floor in front of the TV. It was sometimes on until 2 in the morning.
And you were college students.
And we were college students, so we were up that late routinely anyway. It's just a night we didn't study.
So, Ken, how were you introduced to Doctor Who?
I had 2 separate introductions to Doctor Who, actually. I was in 5th grade, and it came on after 3-2-1 Contact, and Matt and I were being babysat, and we watched 3-2-1 Contact over there, and Doctor Who would come on afterwards, and I always thought the theme song was cool, but I could never quite get into the episodes because, well, they were showing them in the 26-minute segments, and I never came in at the beginning of a story, and at the time, I found it a little on the impenetrable side. Then, Beth came home from school for the summer, and by this time, she'd been thoroughly indoctrinated, and basically asked Dad if we could tape Doctor Who on Sunday nights, because that's when it was on Channel 11 at that point. And it was the middle of summer, and she was watching it, and I happened to walk in, and it's like, oh, what's this? And she just had it on the telly.
For myself, I've actually been watching Doctor Who longer than my memory goes back. I know I was watching it in 1976. I remember watching it for a brief period of time while I was living at my grandmother's house, which was in 1976. I believe I was watching it earlier. All right, I've actually intentionally saved you, Jim, for last, because I think you're actually the most recent inducted into the Doctor Who Society.
Well, I did encounter Doctor Who on PBS when I was a kid, and much like what happened with Ken, I saw them, but I didn't really follow them that closely. The episodes didn't seem to have any connection to one another, and I didn't quite understand what was going on, and from one week to the next, there were different people who were playing the Doctor, and it got kind of confusing. But it was also on right after Monty Python and Dave Allen at Large, and I really enjoyed Dave Allen at Large. And at the time, we didn't have things like remotes, so I just kind of left the TV on and caught Doctor Who in the peripheral. Like I said, I really didn't get into it that much, really wasn't able to enjoy it, and I got to the point where I was just ignoring it. Then Doug met up with Ken, and a few times when I went up to visit them up at college, they got into these big Doctor Who things. And remembering it from my childhood, I wasn't really that big into it. So I was there, but I kind of spaced out a little bit. And I kind of gained a reputation of being anti-Doctor Who somewhere along the line. So it goes off the air, it comes back again, and Doug says, hey, I know you really didn't enjoy these, but here, give it another try. It's different, it's new. And I tried it, and I loved it, and I said, okay, let me try some of that old stuff again, because I'm older now, hopefully I'm a little bit wiser, and maybe I can actually get what's going on. And the episodes that he gave me were actually in order, so I could follow the storyline.
I think one of the things that makes the new Doctor Who more accessible to people is the fact that it has a budget. The original Doctor Who was meant for a children's audience, although from the writing you can't tell that because it was never written stupid. It was always written so the whole family could watch it. I'm going to do this in reverse because you've only seen a handful of the original episodes. What's your favorite? What stands out in your mind, and who is your favorite companion?
I will say that Tom Baker is probably my favorite because he was the first one that I got introduced to back when I was a kid. He's the most familiar face. He's the best known for being the Doctor. If somebody is referring to Doctor Who in any other show in the past 20 years, they're probably referring to Tom Baker as the actor.
At least in this country.
As far as companions go, I can't really claim to having a favorite. There are a couple that stick out more in my mind than the others, but I think it's because I've seen more of those episodes than the others.
Well, who stands out to you?
Sarah Jane Smith is right up there at the top, as is Ace. And the reasons I've seen those episodes more than any others is because I know that Doug's favorite companion is...
Sarah Jane Smith.
Quite honestly, having met Sophie Aldred in real life, she's got great gams.
It's actually having met the actors who play the characters that make, for me, choosing who the best was really hard. I mean, I really like Peter Davidson as the Doctor, but John Pertwee and Colin Baker stand out to me as just fabulous human beings.
For me, when I'm thinking about my favorite Doctor in terms of the character, I can't judge them one above the other. Peter Davison was the best actor playing the young cricket-playing Doctor, where Patrick Troughton was the best...
Professor.
They weren't written as the same character other than the fact that it was still the Doctor. Now, that said, Colin Baker, I have great fondness for him because of meeting him at cons and having two wonderful Colin Baker anecdotes. There was one con that Doug and I had gone to, and Doug's brother Scott was with us, but it was on the 4th of March or thereabouts on my brother Matt's birthday. And I wanted to get Colin's autograph, but I also wanted to get a copy of his autograph from Matt. Scott, who really wasn't into Doctor Who, agreed to get it, but he got an autograph from the other guy at the table, and he said Scott, and then he said Matt, and it confused people, and then he was explaining it was for a birthday present. Colin only caught part of this, thought it was Scott's birthday, and therefore sent happy birthday to my brother to Doug's brother,
and made everyone in the room sing with him.
It was great. The other one, the first thing I have to explain is before Colin Baker played the Doctor, during Peter Davison's run, he played a Gallifreyan soldier named Maxwell. This was a con mid to late 90s when I was going out with Jen. And Jen and I had made her this elaborate Time Lord getup with a collar thingy, the whole bit. And at the last minute, I threw together a Gallifreyan soldier uniform just as her escort. We go to the con. We sit in on some panel of Colin's. Afterwards, Jen goes up to actually meet him. I don't feel necessarily obliged to. I've met him before. So I'm just standing back. Everyone else is filing out of the room. Colin's talking. Then he looks across the room. He sees me. He goes, Maxwell!
At this point, I do feel obligated to point out to those who may not be 100% familiar with Doctor Who that Tom Baker and Colin Baker are in no way, shape, or form related. So when we say Tom Baker and Colin Baker, if you're sitting there scratching your head wondering, are these two guys related? No.
Let's go back to you, Beth. What's your favorite original series episode and your favorite companion?
Tom Baker is my Doctor because that's the one that I was introduced to, but I really liked Sylvester McCoy and Ace. But I liked Sarah Jane Smith a lot, too, and that was who I was introduced to.
Boy, this Sarah Jane Smith character seems really popular.
Yeah, now she's even got her own show. 32 years after she left the show, she gets her own spinoff from Doctor Who.
But this was not the first time that they tried to do a spinoff for her.
Canine and Company, but they only made a pilot episode, I believe.
Which was almost as boring as Tom Baker.
In person, not as the Doctor. I really liked Leela, the Eliza Doolittle.
I loved every time she said, don't worry, Doctor, I'll protect you.
As I said before, I really don't have a favorite Doctor in the context of them playing the Doctor. I have another friend, Neil, says that Patrick was actually probably the best simply because he was the one who more or less defined the character, even though he was the second actor playing him, because at that point they actually could start building the mythology. Favorite companion? Maybe Romana. The character of Romana, like the Doctor, was a Time Lord and therefore could regenerate, and after Mary Tam wanted to leave the show...
She just took Princess's form.
She thought it looked rather nice on the Princess.
What do you think are the major differences between the original series and the new series?
Better special effects.
Kind of a latecomer into the series? How do you see it, Jim?
I see several things that I consider to be better about the new series than the old series. The first is the special effects. They no longer are working off of a children's television show budget, but they're actually working off of a science fiction budget. I like the fact that they're one-hour episodes and it isn't serialized. They usually have a couple of two-parters throughout the season, but for the most part, you can sit down and watch the entire storyline in one sitting, and you don't have to worry about missing something in the middle.
And it doesn't take 2.5 hours!
I think that because of the fact that the producers, the actors, the writers are all fans of the old show, they want to uphold the spirit of the old show, but don't feel limited by the old show.
The Doctor's much more powerful now, in ways that we never saw in the old show.
I'd have to agree with you. I think one of the things that they've left is that they want to keep the Gallifreyan aspect and his home life, and they don't want to discuss Omega and Rassilon anymore. They want that to be mysterious, but meanwhile they're using him and they're bringing a little more science fiction into the Doctor. The fact that he's able to drink pickle juice and that can get cyanide out of his body.
Regenerating a hand, even though it was that close to his regeneration.
That's a really good point, that he loses his hand, but he grows a new one.
Which, nothing like that ever happened on the old show.
He gets exposed to radiation poisoning and is able to channel it down and put it in a sneaker and then throw a sneaker away.
And he can open the TARDIS with a snap.
We're in the largest library in the universe. I'm the Doctor. Look me up.
In general, he comes across as being a lot more confident. He knows what he's capable of than he ever really seemed in the old episodes that I've seen.
In the old episodes, especially when you look at Romana, he was a Time Lord, yes, but he was a Time Lord who didn't pay attention in Time Lord school and didn't know a lot of things, because they got Romana in and she graduated top of her class and she knows all these things, so he was kind of the bumbling Doctor.
But now he seems as though he's graduated.
Oh yeah. Now he's gotten all his experience from life, all 900 years of it.
Both Colin's Doctor and Sylvester's Doctor, you got a more of a sense of the confidence and I have more power than you're aware of. They both had a little bit of that. They were trying to get back to it, but it never quite gelled quite as well. Then again, it's one of those things. Christopher Eccleston in his one series had almost as many stories as Sylvester McCoy had in his 3 years.
Kind of going along the lines of the internal Doctor, what the current series has that the old series didn't have really is that emotional vulnerability. When it comes to the gadgets and time and space and planets, the Doctor is there and can teach everything to his companions. But when it comes to humanity and seeing himself and his emotions, it's the companions teaching him.
The Doctor, at the beginning of the new series, has already committed genocide. He eradicated all of the Daleks, to his knowledge, and he is the last of the Time Lords. And he's paying a price for it. He's not just the lone Time Lord going off on his own with a great fondness of Earth. Now he is the last of his kind, and he always wants to find a way out. He won't even kill the Suntarans without going and giving them a chance to give up.
In all of the years and all of the episodes of Doctor Who, my favorite line comes at the end of The Doctor Dances, when he's like, yes, just this one time, everybody lives! It still gives me tingles down my spine.
The Lonely Child and The Doctor Dances is probably the single best individual story in Doctor Who history.
I think, Ken, that brings us to a really good segue into what's your favorite new episode and why.
It's funny because each season has one episode that really sticks out in my mind. Season 3 was Blank, where you get to see the Doctor and Martha Jones for a total of like 5 minutes of the episode. But it was very well told, very well written, passionate characters, and just an all-around great science fiction concept.
And wouldn't it be great if Sally Sparrow could become a new companion?
Yes. Season 4, Turn Left was just magnificent in the way of storytelling. And again, the Doctor was in all of 3 minutes of it. As much as I enjoyed the character of Doctor Who and Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant's portrayals of the character, it seems like when they take the Doctor and slide him into the background, everybody else just shines.
As a production trick, they write these episodes where the primary characters are not a major part of the story, so they can basically be filming two episodes at once. It's just a trick to save time, and it works brilliantly.
And again, in the United States, Turn Left has not aired yet.
It's the first part of the ending trilogy.
My favorite episode would essentially be anything written by Stephen Moffat. That guy could really write and produce a show. Oh, wait a second, he is!
Not yet. The current producer, Russell Davies, is leaving after this season. Stephen Moffat, who's been one of his chief writers, will be taking over as the chief executive producer after this.
I really liked the library episodes at this season, but then I have a thing for libraries.
Half the people in this room are professional librarians, folks, and they aren't me and Doug.
I have to say, I liked the ending of the library episodes, especially River Song's last little spiel about the Doctor never being able to give up. What do we want to say about season four?
Well, they did a great recap of it in Turn Left.
They did a great job of recapping both seasons three and four.
I think from bringing in Donna Noble as a bit of comic relief and a really incredibly annoying character, they did an absolutely marvelous job of making her the most important person in the universe.
I think Catherine Tate, the actress who plays Donna, got a lot of crap as a companion, basically because rather than being the sweet young thing that Billy Piper was as Rose, here's this late 30s, early 40s-something woman as the Doctor's companion, and a lot of people did not take to her. And yeah, the character was kind of annoying when we first see her, and I was tearing up in the last part of the finale.
That's one thing that I will say about the four or five companions in the past 4 years. All of them have been very strong characters, and all of them have had a very deep impact on the Doctor. Not many of the previous companions can claim that. As we said, the episodes are not serialized, but if you've missed any of Season 4 before you see the finale, find some way of making sure that you've seen everything, because the show does a really nice job of tying everything together at the end, and you don't want to have missed out on anything.
I go a step further and say it's not just a bookend to the Season 4, it's actually a bookend to Russell Davies producing. It really feels like his swan song, that he was saying goodbye, and this was the ending for his characters. This could easily have been a traditional American series finale, rather than just a season finale.
Unfortunately, it's not going to be.
However, they are not having a 2009 season, per se. They're going to do two or three or four Doctor Who movies, but not a regular series.
We are now entering the spoiler zone.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Be prepared that anything and everything that we say from this point forward is probably going to be a spoiler, and if you don't want anything ruined for you, this is a good place to pause, jump to the end, then come back in a couple of weeks and you can hear our reflections on this series finale. Doug, why don't you get us started for a change?
Yes, the rumors are true. Rose, Martha, Donna, Captain Jack, Mickey, Jackie,
Sarah Jane...
all star in the season finale.
And Gwen Cooper, and Yanto Jones, and Luke Smith.
And K-9. The big bad guy for this season is the return of the Daleks and their creator, Davros.
Who hasn't been seen since the old show. The first thing they did was to kidnap the planet Earth out of its place in the sky and move it somewhere across the galaxies.
And then you finally get to meet the Shadow Proclamation.
They're the police force of the universe. They showed up in the first Martha episode.
I thought it was kind of a neat trick that they managed to kidnap the Earth, but left the TARDIS behind. That's some fancy shooting there.
And all the fans out there who were disappointed when Rose left the show and didn't like the ending they gave her, you'll like the new ending better.
Bad news is, they probably won't be bringing her back.
At least not back to this universe.
The thing you do need to realize is that the season finale of this one does start with the Turn Left episode. If you miss the Turn Left episode, you're going to start out behind in the two-parter finale.
Beyond the companions, they do bring back other people that have played a significant part in the story, like Harriet Jones, who's the former Prime Minister. In a lot of ways, if somebody played any type of significant role in the past 4 years, and their character is still alive in some way, shape, or form, they made an appearance.
I love the Doctor's reaction when he met Gwen Cooper.
Actually, that's one of the things I loved about the whole episode, is it answers outstanding questions. For instance, it says Gwen Cooper is a descendant of Gwyneth.
Eva Miles played the character Gwyneth, and then the actress goes on and plays a character named Gwen on Torchwood.
Both from Cardiff.
Both from Cardiff, and they basically just say, yes, they're related.
But other things that they have put into this episode is you actually see the TARDIS being piloted by six people. So for the first time in 40 years, they actually say, the reason that the TARDIS panels are a hexagon is because it's meant to have six drivers. Well, let's give our reflections on it. I'm going to start with myself this time. I thought it was absolutely incredible writing by Russell Davies. I thought the acting was top-notch, the special effects, Industrial Light and Magic quality, which is not saying that much these days, but really, it's meant as a compliment.
I thought that the way they brought Torchwood and the Adventures of Sarah Jane and the Doctor and his companions and made it such a cohesive episode with characters from each cast was really neat.
It definitely gives a one-world feel.
Something that there hasn't really been.
It does a wonderful job of bringing these three separate shows together into the episode and do it seamlessly.
It really keeps the past and the present and presumably the future all related also. You've got Unit, you've got Sarah Jane, got the stuff from the past tying into what's going on right now.
As much as I thought they did a wonderful job of bringing everything from the past 4 years together, there were certain points where I wished that they had gone back the 45 years and incorporated just a little bit more of the historical Doctor Who stuff to truly bring it all together. There were a couple of instances where they could have brought in old actors or old scenes and really expanded it beyond the 4 years. I was thinking specifically about the point where Devereaux is trying to depress the Doctor by telling him about all of the people who have died for him. And they went through the past 4 years and all the people who have, quote-unquote, died because of him. But there were so many other people even before that that the Doctor could have felt guilty about.
You see, the fans generally don't like Matthew Waterhouse.
He is the one companion who died to save the Earth.
In sentiment, I agree with what you're saying about bringing more of the 45-year history into it. However, in practice, I think it would have just muddied things up and made the episode more confusing.
If you could get William Russell in to show Ian Chesterton having a heart attack when he sees the Daleks arrive, it would have fit the story, but it would have confused the hell out of people.
Well, I did think it was neat that there are now two Doctors.
I liked Sarah's reaction to Jack's reaction to her.
Captain Jack has some of the best lines in the episode.
And the single creepiest line in all of Doctor Who-dom. Who's the young boy?
That was creepy.
Okay, we've put out the disclaimer about the spoilers. And we've already thrown so much at you. Let's each take one specific spoiler and just ruin the snot out of it. Beth, you kind of already threw out the two Doctors aspect of it.
The Doctor and the TARDIS get split because they're going to destroy it, and Donna connects with the hand of the Doctor, and he grows into a whole Doctor. So now there are two Doctors.
And I'm going to jump off there for my favorite spoiler of the episode. My favorite spoiler is the Doctor that is created with the contact between Donna and the Doctor's severed hand. He gets to go to the parallel universe with Rose and finally say the three little words that she's been waiting for 3 years.
To be continued?
Yes, those are the words!
Whispers three little words, and she kisses him passionately, so evidently they were the three words she wanted to hear.
My favorite spoiler is that while one of the companions technically dies, everybody lives.
David Tennant, the 11th Doctor. We do in fact see the Doctor get shot by a Dalek, and he regenerates into an exact copy of the person he has been. And this is before the whole thing with the growing a spare body thing. This was just, he starts to regenerate, and we're left going, okay, who's going to play the Doctor next week? And then he regenerates into himself.
He only uses part of his regeneration to heal himself, and then he shoots the rest of it off into the hand. Now, my question on that regard is the Doctor's daughter. When we see her, quote-unquote, regenerate, does this explain how she got away with what she did?
They left the Doctor's daughter vague enough to say, maybe it was a regeneration, maybe not.
Those are four very significant spoilers. With that said, critiques?
5 pens out of 4 in the puck protector.
I'm going to go back and change one of my previous answers. These two episodes are my favorite Doctor Who episodes of the new series.
These two Doctor Who episodes make the whole Doctor Who universe cohesive. That's what's good about them.
I'll give it 10 Doctors out of 10.
Which leaves us with the question of, where does Doctor Who go from here? Over the next year and a half, there's going to be between 3 and 4 Doctor Who movies, with the show returning as a weekly series in 2010. Both Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures are scheduled to return in 2009. Torchwood with a 5-part miniseries acting as its 3rd season, and the Sarah Jane Adventures returning for a 2nd season. Also on the docket is a computer-animated K-9 series, and that's supposed to come out sometime in 2009. Speaking of K-9, it was also wonderful to see his return in the series finale as well, for his obligatory 30-second visit.
We would have been in trouble without him.
And that's not even including the potential spin-offs that they could create. We've talked about the Doctor's daughter, and there's a lot of speculation on the net as to whether or not Jenny's going to get her own series, or if she's just going to make a return visit.
Rose and the Doctor could have another show, too. The second Doctor and Rose could have a new series.
Georgina Moffat is a new companion.
Actually, I would rather see that than a Jenny spinoff. If there's anybody else that you could propose get a spinoff, either old series or new series, is there anybody that jumps to mind that you'd love to see get revisited? It doesn't even have to be in a spinoff. It could be a guest appearance like how Sarah Jane returned.
I'd like to see Paul McGann get a real outing.
I'd like to see a new take on either the two Doctors or the three Doctors, where you get Paul McGann, Christopher Eccleston, and David Tennant all working together.
The Brigadier. We need to see the Brigadier. They've established that he's still alive. They mentioned Sir Alistair specifically, but I would actually like to see Nicholas Courtney appear on the show.
Okay, so that being said, for those of you who live in the United States, we highly recommend that you catch the last three episodes of Doctor Who on the Sci-Fi Channel. The episode Left Turn should be airing on July 18th, with The Stolen Earth airing on the 25th, and Journey's End on August 1st. These dates are tentative, based on Sci-Fi Channel's schedule. At this stage in the program, we would normally talk about upcoming TORP projects, but absolutely nothing has changed since our last TORP cast, so just go back and re-listen to the ending of that episode.
As always, we thank you for listening and would appreciate your feedback. Please write Jim at torponline.net.
We'd like to thank you for listening. This has been a broadcast of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2008.
Welcome to TORPcast Episode 16. WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel. Welcome to TORPcast Episode 16. WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel. Welcome to TORPcast Episode 16. WhoCast. This week we will discuss time travel.